How important is civility? In an age that venerates hustle, self-esteem, and full-throated opinion slinging, simply showing respect to those around you can seem like an old-fashioned virtue. But it remains an essential one, according to Alexander Hudson, author of the new book, The Soul of Civility: Timeless Principles to Heal Society and Ourselves. Alexandra is a writer, speaker, and educator, and she joins us now to share five of her key insights.
Hi, my name is Alexandra Hudson, and I'm an author and journalist passionate about the way that ideas and storytelling can change people's lives. My first big idea is about why the oldest book in the world is about civility. I also think it's appropriate for a book club to be looking at insights from the world's oldest book. My book is about the question of how to do life together across difference, which is the most important question of our day. But it's not a new challenge. It's actually timeless. The human condition is defined by two competing forces, our love of others and our love of self. We are an insatiably social species. We yearn to be in community together, and yet our self-love always threatens the human social enterprise, which is why friendship and community will always be fragile. That the oldest book in the world is about how to flourish despite deep difference shows how seriously our species has thought about this central question. 2,400 years before Christ, there lived a wealthy and powerful statesman named Ptahotep. Ptahotep was an advisor to Pharaoh, the leader of ancient Egypt, the most sophisticated civilization in the world. He made it to the pinnacle of earthly success. He had been in the room where big, world-altering decisions were made. He had helped shape the direction of the world's most advanced society, and he had tasted the best and finest things that money could buy. Ptahotep was set to succeed Pharaoh as ruler of Egypt, but he turned down the offer of temporal power to lead a quiet yet honorable life in retirement. After his withdrawal from an illustrious public life, he began to reflect on the ingredients of the life well lived. He resolved to write a letter about his life lessons to Pharaoh's son in hopes that he might take the lessons to heart and lead Egypt with wisdom and grace. His maxims are what is considered today the oldest book in the world, and his teachings are remarkably relevant today. Do not be proud and arrogant with your knowledge, the teachings begin. Wretched is he who injures a poor man. Teaching 8 instructs, do not malign anyone, great or small. And teaching 22, do not repeat slander or even listen to it. The teachings of Ptahotep wrestle with this universal problem. How can we overcome our selfish nature so that we can live and thrive with others? Ptahotep offers us an answer: civility. My second big idea is that there is an essential difference between civility and politeness. Part of my story and reason for writing this book is that I was raised by Judy the Manners Lady and then was disillusioned by my experience working in politics in Washington, D.C. I quickly learned that those in politics who survived and succeeded in Washington did so because of their punishing ruthlessness or extreme politesse. At first, I thought that these two modes were opposite extremes of the spectrum. I learned that instead, they were actually two sides of the same coin. They were both modes that originated from a dark place in the human spirit, a place where we are willing to instrumentalize others and do anything necessary to win. Some people, usually the younger and greener politicos, chose to be overly aggressive and hostile. The more seasoned political operators, however, were shrewd. They knew that overt aggression would only take them so far. They chose instead politeness as a weapon. This allowed them to shroud their opportunism in the appearance of altruism while disarming their opponents and disguising their true aims. My mother had always told me that manners were an outward expression of our inward character, and that's why manners mattered. And yet, I was surrounded by people who were well-mannered enough and yet ruthless and cruel. This experience helped me realize that civility and politeness were different things. People tend to use civility and politeness interchangeably while referring to manners, etiquette, and social norms, but not all social norms are equal or desirable. While politeness and manners are the form, the technique of an act, it's manners, etiquette. Civility is something deeper. Instead of focusing on the form alone, civility gets to the motivation of an act. Instead of the technique of politeness, civility is the disposition of the heart that recognizes and respects the common humanity, the fundamental personhood, and inherent dignity of other human beings. Civility sometimes requires that we are impolite to others in telling them hard truths or engaging in robust debate. This mode may seem rude, but are in fact ways to truly respect others. My third big idea is about the hidden power of unbundling people. Too often today, we reduce people to one aspect of who they are. We define them by their worst trait or decision. Something they said or did, which they probably regret, but which, thanks to the internet or social media, has been immortalized and widely circulated. Instead, we should choose unbundling people. Unbundling is a mental framework that helps us see the part of someone in light of the whole, the bad or mistake of a person in light of the good and in light of their dignity and personhood and worth. Our current culture views the world and people through a cheapened simplicity. Everything and everyone is either right or wrong, good or evil. We define people based on one thing they've said or done. Sometimes, even if it occurred years or decades ago, and we cancel them for it. This view of the world and people is reductive, essentializing, and degrading to the diversity and beauty of the human personality. I've had practice unbundling in my own life. I've had to grapple with balancing the good and the bad in one of my seminal influences, Socrates. Socrates enchanted me with the rewards of the philosophic life, the world of ideas, the life of the mind, and the nobility of a life of embodied beauty, goodness, and truth. Socrates said that virtue is health of the soul, and sickness is vice of the soul. Virtue is its own reward, he said, because it promotes a healthy soul. Vice is its own punishment because it reflects a soul's ill health. A life detached from the temptations of the world, Socrates says, allows us to more freely pursue the philosophic life, the highest and best life. These ideas captivated my mind and enlarged my soul. And yet, as his student Plato describes him, Socrates was a proponent of eugenics. He wanted to abolish the family, art, poetry, and music. As a humanist, a mother, an artist, I vehemently disagree with these ideas. Do Socrates' bad opinion on eugenics or banning the family or art in society undermine his thoughts on why virtue is good for its own sake or the rewards of the philosophic life? Absolutely not. Unbundling people can help us reclaim a full, nuanced, and rich view of the human person. It can help us see the part in light of the whole, mistakes in light of virtues. It can help us see our selfish, domineering nature in light of our dignity as human beings and our irreducible worth as persons. My fourth big idea is about why incivility, disrespect for others, hurts others, but also hurts oneself. The title of my book is The Soul of Civility. The word soul is reference and homage to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail. King taught me that there is a moral foundation for civility. Treating others with decency, dignity, and respect is non-negotiable because they are our fellow human beings. As King said, human beings share an irreducible, equal moral worth. We have dignity, Dr. King noted, which is why he dedicated his life to creating a world in which, quote, all men will respect the dignity and worth of the human personality, end quote. Human dignity was the moral bedrock for his battle against racism. It is also the moral foundation for civility. King wrote that segregation hurts both parties involved. It degrades the dignity of the segregated because it gives them a false sense of inferiority. It deforms the soul of the segregator because it gives them a false sense of superiority. The same is true for civility. It's often said that nice guys finish last. How can they compete with someone who is willing to do or say anything in order to win? But the truth is, when someone is malicious to others in order to get ahead, they don't actually win at all. They debase themselves, as they do the person to whom they are cruel. Just as civility ennobles both parties, incivility hurts both others and self. My fifth big idea is about how the porching revolution can change the world. an attempt to flee the divided nature of Washington politics, my husband and I moved back to his home state of Indiana. Soon after moving to Indianapolis, I received an unexpected invitation after church one day. "I'm Joanna Taft," said the tall, socially fearless woman with a blonde, bobbed haircut and ready smile. "Would you like to porch with us sometime?" she asked. This marked the first time I had heard the word porch used as a verb. For Joanna, porching is about reviving the communal living room. The porch is a quasi-public third place, a neutral ground from where people of different backgrounds can encounter and befriend one another. Though originally from the Washington, D.C. area, Joanna chose to build a life in Indianapolis with her husband. She has cultivated her porch as a haven from the hurriedness of modern life. It's a place to forge new friendships, an incubator of ideas to make the community brighter, a catalyst for further cultural and communal renewal, and a venue where those who differ politically, racially, culturally can form bonds and feel seen, known, and loved. I realize that the civility of Joanna's front porch was the essential building block of civil society and, in turn, our democracy. And Joanna, I learned, is staging a revolution against our atomized and fractured world, all from her front porch, what I call the porching revolution. She taught me that we can each be part of the porching revolution too. Anyone, with or without a porch, can be part of healing their life, their community, and even the world, one relationship, one interaction, one act of civility at a time.
Thank you, Alexandra. That was 5 big ideas from The Soul of Civility, Timeless Principles to Heal Society and Ourselves. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.